trial.
So the ECOG trial is going to be, you know, very important. Okay, so
to me, that's like huge.
It's huge. And now you don't have the pulmonary hemorrhage issue, and you don't have the brain met issue because, by definition, they don't have brain mets. By definition, they can't bleed into the lung because it just came out. And so the fraction of patients who are going to be eligible for that study is going to be high. And certainly chemo's the standard, okay? So one of the nice things about that study is it's going to answer the question, and you would expect a much higher cure rate in the bevacizumab arm. Now, if that study's positive and the RADIANT study's positive, okay, and the erlotinib plus bevacizumab study's positive, what you're going to see is people getting chemo and Bev, and then maintenance erlotinib and Bev. Even without a study, I think you would see that happen. If both of those studies are positive, my prediction is you would see a lot of that, even without a study. So ultimately, what we want to do is cure patients. And so if stuff makes people live longer in stage four but doesn't cure them, that's nice. But if it ends up curing a lot more people, that's going to be doubly nice. And so both of those trials are incredibly important.
And we're seeing the launch of a similar trial in breast cancer right now. Chemo plus or minus Bev. The huge colon cancer trial has already accrued. We're going to see safety data at ASCO 2008, and hopefully we're going to see some efficacy data not too long beyond that. So one of the questions is, you know, how are people going to respond to this ECOG study? And one of the interesting aspects of it is that the three allowable chemo regimens are all CIS-based. And we know from our patterns of care studies that our group has just completed that while CIS is the dominant platinum used by investigators, carbo is what's being used in practice. So how do you think that's going to play out?
I don't think that's going to be the dominant issue in my own practice. In fact, I, in the adjuvant setting, predominantly use CISNET, which is a change from 4 or 5 years ago. And I find it better tolerated than it used to be because of amend and all the other things that have happened. You know, the issue is we've never accrued rapidly to an adjuvant trial in the U.S., and the thoracic surgeons and the medical oncologists have not been engaged together to do this. It's been a huge issue. The lung cancer study group was there to do this, and it was doing it, but not as well as the reviewers wanted it to do, but better than we've ever done. We haven't completed squat for randomized adjuvant trials. I mean, the stage 1B CALGB trial had only a few hundred patients, and it was underpowered and unfortunate to be so underpowered. And now there's going to be three really important adjuvant trials, and the question is, are we going to get the surgeons on board and get the medical oncologist telling the surgeons, hey, we got to put the patients on these trials? I don't think it's the CIS issue. It's whether the system, you know, is going to say, God, we can cure more patients. Let's get these patients on trial. And we need to.
Yeah, I see oncologists, you know, listening. And they're hearing the story about CIS. And I think that they're going to be open to putting patients on this study. And I think there are a lot of oncologists who put tons of people in that colon study. And patients, they don't want to recur.
Right.
And it is a promising situation. It was a very attractive. That colon study put 2,600 people on in 2 years. 2,600 people.
Well, that's what we wish we could do in lung cancer, though. But it just doesn't happen. You know, we don't have the track record of doing it. I mean, is it logical? Yes. I mean, and if you told a patient you might increase your cure rate, patients are going to be wanting to do it.